Welcome to Ask Ally, the self-publishing advice podcast from the Alliance of Independent Authors. This week, it's another Indie Author Fringe highlight, showcasing a presentation from our free online conference for self-publishing authors.
And hello, and welcome to this presentation for the Alliance of Independent Authors Fringe event, How to Use Podcasting to Grow Your Indie Author Business. Now, I'm Tim Lewis, and I'm the host of the Begin Self-Publishing podcast. Just finished my 110th episode, and I've been podcasting since 2015. I'm also obviously a self-publisher, and I've recently been nominated for the 2017 Podcast Awards in the Education category. You never know, I might have actually won it by the time you see this presentation. I think that's probably quite unlikely, as I'm up against Grammargal, but you never know. So some of you are probably wondering what a podcast is anyway. So podcasts are basically on-demand audio shows that you typically listen to on a phone. They started off as little audio productions that you could download to these iPod devices that Apple had a few years back, hence the name podcast. Podcast isn't a great name, but you basically would listen to a show that you downloaded on your phone. So, for example, as you can see on the right-hand side, I've brought up what you see when you search for one of the Ally podcasts. And you have a show, and then you have all of the episodes whenever they're released. So typically shows are released on a weekly, sometimes a daily basis, depending on the creator of the podcast. You can find podcasts on the built-in podcasts app on iOS, which is iPhone or iPad. Or if you've got an Android phone, then you have to go and download an app from the Android store to actually be able to use that. One of the best ones is something called Stitcher Radio. There's a few other ones. Pocket Casts is another one that you might want to look at if you've got an Android phone. Simply, there are also other slightly better apps that you can pay for or download on the on iPhones. So I use one called Overcast myself. So you basically subscribe to these shows, and then you'll receive an update when a new show is available, and you can listen to that on your phone out of bounds. It downloads the show to begin with, so you don't need to have network coverage. So it's very good for things like flights, or if you're doing washing up, or anything where it's a background activity. Podcasts are very good to listen to. So the next question is, who can launch a podcast? Well, it's more or less exactly the same kind of concept as with indie self-publishing. Really, anybody can launch a podcast. And I'm sure that some people would say that anybody has launched a podcast. There are some truly terrible ones out there, just like there are some truly terrible indie books out there. But on the whole, most podcasts are quite a good standard, and you can find an awful lot of niche podcasts about particular subjects. Apple is the big dog in the podcasting world in the same way that Amazon is the big dog in the self-publishing world. There are other services out there, but Apple are probably even more dominant in podcasting than Amazon are in self-publishing. So the way that a podcast works from a technical perspective, and you don't necessarily need to know this too much to actually launch a podcast, is that there is a file that you have somewhere available on the internet, and that file lists all of the episodes that you've got for your podcast. So it'll point to where they can download the audio file, which is basically an MP3 file of the show, and that is called an RSS feed. So it sounds like it's a very sort of interesting concept, but really an RSS feed is just a list of locations of episodes of your podcast. The whole RSS thing stands for a really simple syndication, and they use it, you might have seen it with blogs as well. It's basically just a list of articles. So when you want to publish a podcast onto the Apple podcast app, you have to log into Apple and give it the location of your RSS feed. So in general, you're better off to use a dedicated podcast hosting company like Libsyn, rather than trying to store the audio files on your own server. But you should never ever be trying to host your audio files on your own web server, simply because the actual media capacity of downloading audio files, especially when you have a new episode, means that most web service hosts will throw you off their network if you try and host a podcast with any kind of traffic whatsoever onto just a normal WordPress site. So you're better off to be hosting those audio files, which is basically just means putting your MP3 file somewhere where it is available to be downloaded. So as I said before, podcasting is the radio equivalent of self-publishing. And similarly to the Amazon marketplace, the Apple podcasting marketplace has the big companies who are basically the old radio companies. So NPR, the BBC, CBC, whatever country you're in, chances are there'll be an awful lot of commercial radio shows that are repurposed as podcast episodes. And those shows usually have several people working for hours in a recording studio. We have a whole team of editors and sound effects people. And you can notice the difference between that and two people in a shed talking into a microphone, which you may have heard in some of the podcasts. But actually, again, as with indie publishing, most people are somewhere in between those two levels. And you can actually get a very, very long way to becoming close to the more radio format show with a reasonably small amount of equipment. And certainly with the right preparation and trying to avoid some of the mistakes, it's actually surprisingly easy to get good audio quality. The other thing that's slightly similar to indie podcasting is that there are a lot of huge indie podcasters who are independent people who are having really big success on the platform. For example, Dan Carlin, who is a former radio host, I believe, his Hardcore History podcast, which is an independently produced one, had 20 million downloads for his show in January. His show is very strange in that he does like multiple hour, almost audiobook quality history monologues. And he only releases an episode every 6 months or so. But even so, that is the kind of level that the really, really big shows get. So I think it's only wise to say the negatives first. Now, a lot of people will just skip this slide when they're talking about podcasting and tell you what a great idea it is and why you should start a podcast. But there are actually, in my experience, quite a few good reasons why you shouldn't launch a podcast, or at least these are reasons why you shouldn't think about launching a podcast. So whatever anybody says, podcasting is generally a terrible way to build up a following. Unless you've got a following on an existing platform, you are not going to get that many listeners for your podcast when it starts. So we talked about Dan Carlin's 20 million downloads a month for a show. And that seems like, oh, great, I might get that in my first month. Well, unless you're very lucky or very skilled at marketing, or you've already got 20 million people reading your blog, you're most certainly not going to get 20 million downloads a month. The average figure from Libsyn, who are basically the biggest podcasting hosting company, is that in the month after you first publish a show, the average median, that is the show with 50% of the downloads below it and 50% above it, the average number of downloads is about 250. It varies up and down from about 220 to 260, depending on the time of year and how many podcasts there are. But this is basically the average number of downloads that your show will have. And most beginning podcasts, including mine, you will start off with hardly any downloads at all. Again, this is affected by what existing audience you have. But if you have no audience at all, and you're a new author, then podcasting isn't a great way to build a following in the short term. It's also actually quite a lot of work to produce a podcast because you've got to edit the audio files. You've got to record the show in the first place. You've got to pay for hosting costs. And if you've got guests, you need to book them in and you need to arrange it. And yeah, I mean, it's also a lot of time to actually produce it because you almost have to produce a blog post as well a lot of the time, depending on what you do. And of course, the old buy my books policy, but that doesn't really work anywhere. So if you just have a podcast that is an enormous advert for your book, you're not going to get any sales from that. In fact, you probably won't get any downloads at all. So that approach, just like with blogging or any kind of social media thing, if you're just only telling people to buy your books, then you're not likely to be that successful. So let's get on to the happy side of things. Why should you consider launching a podcast? Well, as I've discussed, and this is certainly the case with Ally, which is why Ally has launched so many podcasts recently, is if you have a community already, then the connection you get with your audience if they listen to your podcast will be so much more in-depth. If you think, if you're listening to my voice now, how much more connected do you feel to me than it would be if I would just put the slides up and there was no voice whatsoever? Sure, people can find blogs easier because SEO is much more advanced and blogs are easier to consume in some ways than a podcast. But on the other hand, podcasting, the connection you have with people, it seems even strange in that many ways it's even more of a connection than you get with video. I've never really ever seen a medium where you make such a connection with people on a personal level as with podcasting. Now, for non-fiction, it gives you the opportunity to have credibility in that area. So let's say you were writing, say, a non-fiction book about fly fishing. So there may not be any podcasts about fly fishing or the particular kind of fly fishing that you do. So maybe it's like rivers in South Scotland is where you've got your book about fly fishing. Then by starting the show, you can always tell people, oh, I'm the host of the South Scotland Fly Fishing podcast. And that gives you credibility. Now, obviously, having a book on it as well gives you credibility. And it gives you a way to basically start interviewing people and talking to people. And they will think, oh, yeah, who was that person who was interviewing me about fly fishing in South Scotland? And you get a credibility from having a podcast. This comes on to the other point that if you have an interview show, then it gives you a great way to make connections with other authors or people in your field of expertise. And personally, I think this is one of the big reasons why I've kept going my podcast, despite not necessarily at times having great download figures. It's just given me an opportunity to interview or talk to and make connections with people who I would otherwise have no connection with whatsoever. And you can see as an author, if you want to get to know other authors in your genre, then a podcast is potentially a fantastic way because you can have a pre-chat up before the show, you can talk to them. You've obviously got the show time. It's a great way to be able to talk to authors. Now, clearly you can email people, but it's not really quite the same. As we'll come back to this connection thing with audio, it's not quite the same as having basically a Skype call with somebody. And this gives you a great opportunity to reach out to people. I mean, I found that in general, I'd say about 90% of the people I've approached for podcast interviews have said yes. Now, you probably want to build up some kind of relationship with them, say, tweet at them or have some sort of conversation with them first if you can. But even so, even with cold asking for people for a podcast interview, an awful lot of people will say yes if they know what a podcast is. Tip is to try and find people who've also got podcasts because they're going to mention you on their podcast that they've been interviewed, possibly. And it also means that they may reciprocate and interview you on their podcast, which is good for everybody. And the last point I make, I've mentioned before, but it's to say, if you are the first podcast on a particular topic, that does make you basically the first expert on it, at least in that medium. Right, well, let's get on to some technical stuff here. So how do you start a podcast? Well, as I described, what you're needing to do is produce what's called an MP3 file. So that's basically just a file which is a recording of anywhere between, say, 5 to 2 hours of audio. As I say, Dan Carlin's shows, he's done up to 6 hours, but the normal length of a podcast is somewhere between 20 minutes and an hour and 10. Though, like with anything, you can do as long or short podcasts as you like. Generally speaking, I think the length of the podcast should be related to how often you do it. So I wouldn't suggest doing an hourly podcast every day. And similarly, if you're going to do a podcast every 3 months, then you may want to make it a longer format show. But like with anything, there are no particular set and fast rules for this. So in terms of what you need for equipment, you could quite happily just record a podcast with your laptop using the built-in mic. The only trouble is that actually most of the built-in mics in laptops are terrible. So we shouldn't start using a laptop mic for a podcast because it will sound terrible. So at the very minimum, you need what is called a USB mic. Now, this can be as simple as one of these sort of headset things that you can buy, something like a Plantronics one. Though those themselves have issues. But if you're just going to be doing very simple interview-based shows using Skype, so you're not talking to somebody in person, then one of them can be just about usable for using for a podcast. Generally speaking, though, you probably want a separate set of headphones, which can be just something that plug in into your computer, like one of those Apple ones, or just a normal set of headphones will do if you're doing an interview, and a USB mic, which is a mic that you just plugs into one of the USB sockets in your computer. I've shown in here in the middle a little illustration of what a USB connector looks like. If you've ever used any kind of components on your computer, you will have plugged in a USB connector into a USB port. It's become the standard now for modern computers. Now, there are some great cheap microphones which are both USB and XLR. Now, XLR is like an audio connector for a microphone. And this is what people use for professional things like if you're doing music recording or things like that, they use this 3-pin XLR connector. Now, there are some microphones like the ATR2100, and there's an equivalent Samsung make of microphone, which is cheaper everywhere outside of the US than the ATR2100. And both of them have both an XLR and a USB connector. So that if you buy, say, an ATR2100, then you can use it with your computer to begin with via a USB connector. And then later on, if you want to go to a more advanced setup, you can switch over to the XLR connector. Now, the problem with XLR connections is that you can't plug them directly into a computer. You have to plug it into something like a mixer or some kind of audio equipment. So the intermediate level, which is, gives better quality audio than just plugging in a USB mic into a computer, you can take an XLR mic and plug it into a mixer. And potentially, you don't even actually need a computer in this setup if you're doing just an interview with somebody else who's present in the same room as you. Because even with the best computer in the world, they tend to make a certain amount of fan noise, which is hardly noticeable on most audio recordings, but depending on your computer, may actually be noticeable. So if you're going to be doing interviews with somebody at your house and they're going to be coming to visit you, then you might want to get two XLR mics, a mixer, You'll probably need headphones for both of you and a digital recorder. Now, a digital recorder is a device where it basically records what's happening around. Now, sometimes these actual digital recorders can give fairly good recordings just without any other equipment. The only slight issue is that you have to worry about placement and where you are. They almost all accept an input from a mixer, or they will. Some of them actually have multiple XLR mic connections in directly. And you could actually record a podcast directly into a digital recorder. But there are issues with sound levels if you do this. So the whole advanced area of podcasting is somewhere where you really do need to follow tutorials, because if you're like me, you can start getting into audio equipment and then you discover the fatal fact that virtually all audio cables seem to be totally different. So even though there's an XLR connector, there might be a strange connector called like a TS or TRS at the other end of the connection. And then you will almost invariably buy the wrong connector. So if you do want to go for a more advanced podcast setup, I would certainly talk to somebody who has done it before and read through some of the tutorials, or maybe even buy an equipment package by somebody like Cliff Ravenscraft. Does an equipment package where you get all of the mixer and the microphone and the cables all with nice little diagrams telling you where to install stuff. But yes, yeah, certainly not something to rush into. But in a very simple situation, you just need a USB mic and a set of headphones. The absolute best, of course, is to hire a recording studio, because they have actually got a soundproof booth. Though I would say that I've actually been interviewed on podcasts where they do hire a recording studio, and it's fallen foul of the fact that I wasn't in the same location and they rung me on a telephone line. Almost invariably, telephone connections are about the worst connection you can get in terms of audio. Telephones aren't actually that good at high quality audio, in the same way that Skype and a lot of the other solutions out there give way more clean audio sound. So if you do hire a recording studio, don't let them tell you to ring people. Get them to use some sort of digital connection, and they probably should have the software to do this, to connect to somebody via Skype or some other digital medium rather than telephoning people, because then you end up with you sounding absolutely terrific and your guest, if they're in a different location, sounding terrible. Now, I put two field interviews ones. And what I mean is, if you want to go to places and interview people, as I say, the most obvious thing is to just buy a digital recorder. And some of these can be quite portable and small, and they usually have a mic on them. And you can just sit there and just hold this digital recorder up to one or two people. A more advanced interview field interview setup is to have two XLR mics and plug them into a digital recorder, or possibly only one mic, which you can move from you to the other person in a kind of reporter-style format. You probably want headphones in that situation, so you can just check that the levels that are actually recording are working properly. So these are the general kind of equipment you could use for podcasts. Honestly, you can spend almost as much money as you like on podcasting equipment. Got a picture of my equipment on the right-hand side. I've got a digital mixer. I've got mixer, digital recorder. I've actually got a voice effects box, which I'm too afraid to use most of the time. And I've got it linked up to my computer, which has got a webcam on it. And I have done shows where I've actually just recorded the audio off a live Facebook broadcast. And that may be a way, if you're looking to get actual audience building, to do something along those lines. Okay, a very quick summary now of what not to do from my lessons of doing 100 odd podcast episodes. Now, the mistake I made, and I keep doing the podcast because I find it useful, the connections I make, But don't create a podcast about a topic that is nothing to do with your books. Now, this may sound like obvious advice, but so many authors are doing this, and they do it with blogs, and they do it with other content. If you're really looking to create a podcast that's going to help your writing career, then you probably want to create, say, a podcast that is related to the topic of your book. And this is true with fiction and non-fiction. It can be about the process of writing your book, but it shouldn't be just a general writing podcast, in my opinion. And certainly you probably don't want to do another self-publishing podcast unless you've got a book about self-publishing, or you intend to write a book about self-publishing. So it kind of sounds obvious, but it's not something clearly I've done. I've never written a book about self-publishing. I'm possibly never, ever going to write a book about self-publishing. So if you're, say, a crime thriller writer, you probably want to podcast about something to do with crime or crime thrillers. You could interview other crime thriller authors and talk to them about their books, or do a podcast where you talk to maybe real crime people. Really try to get an audience of people who are interested in your podcast, who are also people who are likely to be interested in your books. Another thing that I don't generally do very well, and I've seen other people do very well, notably Joanna Penn and Paul Teague, is don't be afraid to mention those parts of your life that you feel comfortable sharing. So people like the personal stories and to find out what you're doing. It's almost this kind of voyeurism that we have. Now, I don't do that much on my show, but it's certainly like with Paul Teague's Self-Publishing Journeys podcast, his diary shows in many ways are much more interesting than his normal author interviews, because he goes through everything he's doing each week. So while I say make sure your podcast is about something to do with your books, don't go down the fully professional route where you're going to be not giving any of your kind of personal life away. You may be very private, in which case you may not want to do this, but give as much of yourself into the podcast as you can. Another much overlooked point is you probably don't want to create a stereo podcast. Now, this is a little bit of an audio thing, but we all heard like stereo effects where you get one sound in one ear and one sound in another ear if you've got a set of headphones, or you've got a stereo speakers and the speakers have got two speakers and you hear different things in each speaker. Now, you can record in stereo. So you'll hear your voice and you're one side, and it's great for music stereo. Music sounds so much better on stereo. But the trouble is that for an MP3 file, having a stereo MP3 file is twice the size of a mono podcast. So this causes a problem for places where there are low or poor internet speeds. And let's say you're trying to go for a global audience. As people download podcasts, you don't want your podcast to be the one that takes three times as long to download as everybody else's. So I would suggest going for mono podcasts where you've just got one channel. I mean, the introductory music will sound worse, but ultimately, I think it's worth it in terms of having a smaller show to download. Another thing that you probably want to avoid is having an explicit show. This means one with swearing in it. Now, I've got nothing against swearing, and I'm not saying this to make any kind of moral point, but iTunes does ban shows from being available in particular iTunes stores if they contain swearing, and they're flagged as such. Now, the very worst thing is to have an explicit show and not tag it as explicit on iTunes, because then you'll probably get your show thrown off iTunes and be banned. So you don't want to do that, but if possible, keep all swearing out of your podcast. And you just bleep people if you need to. Another great podcast failure is people playing copyrighted music. So even though you might like We Are the Champions by Queen, don't play it in your podcast because you will be opening yourself up to being sued to have no money whatsoever. Now, there's an awful lot of podcasts that totally ignore this rule. But the trouble is that if you suddenly have success with your podcast for some reason, you don't want to be end up being sued by record companies because you haven't purchased your own music. Or I think YouTube has a collection of music that you can use. And there are companies like Jewelbeat and Music Radio Creative who you can buy music off to use as your introductory music on the show. The next what not to do is to go to a hosting company that isn't established or has potential financial issues. Now, the company I'm thinking of here is SoundCloud. A lot of these companies offering free and cheap hosting of podcasts are venture capital funded and they're running out of money. I mean, SoundCloud had almost gone bankrupt several times in the last few months. And while SoundCloud will probably continue to be funded, the podcasting side of SoundCloud is so small and so loss-making that it's extremely likely at some point they're going to abandon all the podcasters. So that's why I wouldn't recommend going to SoundCloud, unless you're doing a very, very short-run podcast where you're not bothered if your show just disappears in a couple of months' time. Another one is something that you hear a lot about, and it's not necessarily with the release of iOS 11, which is the newest one, where they've changed the podcast app a little. Not quite as big an issue as it was before, but a lot of people obsess about ratings and reviews for their show, and also something called New and Noteworthy. New and Noteworthy is an Apple chart where they show podcasts that have been new or noteworthy. And there was all of this idea that if you got your show into New and Noteworthy, you get so many hundred downloads. But basically what seems to be the case is that hardly anybody ever looks at the New and Noteworthy chart. And I've got my show into New and Noteworthy and I saw hardly any increase in downloads whatsoever. But you'll hear advice that's a little bit old from a few years ago where people go on about getting into New and Noteworthy. So don't worry about that whatsoever. And similarly with reviews, for podcasting, hardly anybody looks at podcast reviews. It's not like books. It's not formatted the same way as Amazon, where reviews are extremely important. And people do read the reviews on Amazon. But you've got to remember that podcasts are free. You can listen to a little bit of it if you want to. And generally, most people tend to find podcasts through word of mouth or through other advertising, and they don't look at the reviews. I mean, obviously, you don't want to end up with just free one-star reviews, but honestly, reviews for podcasting are possibly one of the biggest waste of time things to worry about in the whole podcasting area. And not many people will say this, but it's just not worth concentrating on ratings and reviews. Okay, so we talked about what not to do. What should you be doing? Well, as I said, if you're interested in the idea of building an audience, then you can kind of do that with a podcast, but you have to combine it with something else. And I would say the best way to do this would be to have a Facebook Live show where you record the audio of it and then that audio becomes the podcast. There are some things that you do need to bear in mind if you do this, though. Firstly, don't shout out too much to people who watch live on your show, or edit those bits out when you actually release the audio. Because you will, if you regularly have a Facebook Live or a Periscope, which is Twitter's equivalent to Facebook Live show, then you will get people watching it live and they will find out about it and they'll mention it to other people. But you don't want your audio podcast to be about just you saying hello to people who nobody's going to know who you're talking about. And similarly, if you do anything visual on the video side of a Facebook Live or a Periscope, then either describe what you're doing or cut it out of the podcast. The next thing I've said is to set up checklists of what you should do and how to promote your show. I'm just going to pause here for a second and then bring up my... So by the magical world of video editing, I've now got my edit podcast audio list. Now, I don't actually use this anymore because I outsource my podcast editing. Saves me a lot of time, but obviously costs more than doing it myself. But you almost certainly want to create this kind of checklist of things so that you can guarantee that you're going to do it, because it's very hard to remember, certainly with podcast editing and also with things like show promotion, exactly what you need to do. So as you're going through, write a little checklist and keep it on to me like Trello, or if you like pen and paper, just keep pen and paper and photocopy some sheets of your checklist. There's all sorts of ways of doing this, but I would suggest having a checklist. So I'm now going to magically go back. So we talked about creating the checklist, and yes, expect the first few episodes to be terrible. This is kind of true with any activity. It won't be brilliant. Nobody expects new podcast episodes to be that wonderful. If you're really a stickler for all perfection, do a trial run podcast for about 10, 20 episodes. Get used to how to do it and then switch to whatever your main one is. One thing I would say is if you're going to do the editing yourself, and possibly even if you're not, take a tutorial of some type. Find something on YouTube or find a podcasting tutorial about using either Audacity, which is free software, or something like Adobe Audition. There's Reaper. There's quite a few Hindenburg. There's quite a few different programs for editing audio. A lot of people use GarageBand. I wouldn't necessarily recommend that, but depends on how much editing you want to do. I remove all the ums and ahs and clicks and noises from my show, but a lot of people leave them in. And to be honest, it doesn't make that much different. I've put here, add the subscribe to Android button to your website. I'll quickly show you what that is. So on my Begin Self-Publishing podcast, you can see I've got a subscribe to Android button. Now, there's a site you can go to called Subscribe on Android. And it's set up by the guys at Blueberry. It's one of the big hosting companies. And you post in your URL for your RSS feed, and it will create a bit of code that you can paste onto your site. And all of these apps, which are for Android, because we say Android hasn't got its own native podcast app like with iOS. So by all of these apps, if you browse to your site on an Android phone and you've got that button on your site, if somebody clicks on it, it will automatically subscribe to your show from that podcast app. So this subscribe on Android button, and you go to subscribeonandroid.com to create it, is worth creating for your show. Another thing that makes sense to do is to be interviewed on other podcasts. Now, depending on your budget, you can actually pay services to get you podcast interviews. Generally speaking, your best advice is just to listen to podcasts and maybe approach the people who run them and see if they would be interested in having you as a guest. You can just forget about the whole process of starting your own podcast and just go for being interviewed on podcasts. And that's a totally reasonable approach. But yes, any chance you have to do podcast interviews exposes you to everybody into that particular podcast's audience. So it's certainly worth doing. And my final point is to just keep going. You need to appreciate that podcasting, it's kind of like with self-publishing, in that you need to keep going and you'll only probably get results over time. So don't necessarily give up if you don't end up with 20 million downloads in the first month. Just appreciate that, say if you get 50 downloads a month, that is you talking to up to 50 people every week or however often you do your podcast. And finally, this is how you can contact me. I'm on both Twitter and Instagram as Begin SP Podcast. I've also got Stone and Press accounts on both of them. And you can email me at timlewis@stoneandpress.com. Obviously, feel free to look up the Begin Self-Publishing podcast on the podcast app, and also, obviously, all the Ask Ally podcast shows are worth listening to as well. So hopefully you've learnt something about podcasting today, and thank you very much for watching this.
You've been listening to an Indie Author Fringe highlight presentation for the Ask Ally Self-Publishing Advice Broadcast, brought to you by the Alliance of Independent Authors. As well as bringing you highlights from the Fringe Conference, our weekly show features a beginners and advanced self-publishing salon and a member Q&A, where Ally members have their most pressing questions answered. All our broadcasts are designed to keep you up to date with the fast-changing choices and challenges of self-publishing. Find more author advice, tips, and tools at our Self-Publishing Advice Centre, selfpublishingadvice.org. And if you haven't already, we invite you to join our organisation and become a self-publishing ally. You can do that at AllianceIndependentAuthors.org. Now, go write and publish.